asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking a credit win for renters, fake free filing, and garbage furniture.
Yeah, buddy, we'll get to free filing fairy tales a little bit later on during this episode.
Okay, Tinkerbell.
This is our Friday flight. We're going to talk about the most interesting stories that we've come across this week.
That was your high school nickname, wasn't it?
Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
You actually want to know what my senior shirt said on the back of it?
Yeah.
Sandwich.
Oh, okay. That was your nickname.
Literally, I didn't have a nickname in college, in high school. And so when the sign-up sheet came around and you had to write something down, I was like, well, I like sandwiches.
I love lamp.
People loved it, though. But what were we talking about? Friday Flight.
Yeah.
We hope everyone's having a beautiful week. I feel like we're having a pretty great week here, in part because we booked some vacation, some travel earlier
this
week.
It's always
exciting. Man. Yeah. We are looking forward to spending about like 5 days or so, short little getaway.
The Dominican.
On the beaches of the Dominican Republic.
It's going to be nice. To celebrate.
I'm looking forward to it, man.
My 40th birthday, Emily's 40th birthday. So it's going to be a good time.
And it's going to be one of those all-inclusive places.
Yeah.
You've never actually been to
Never
one
done
of those.
One before.
Kate and I haven't been, I think, basically since our honeymoon. So,
dude,
I'm really looking forward to it. It's
our
gonna
hotel
be,
room?
It's going to be great.
You make fun of me for this, but it has a pool in it. And you're like, dude, it's this tiny thing. It's no big deal. But for me, this sounds pretty incredible. It sounds like something I should not be able to enjoy.
I think you're fooled by the perspective.
I'm like, I'm not Richard Branson. Who gets to do this?
The perspective photography. We'll report back on the
yeah.
on the size of the pool.
It's probably literally
Kate
like one of those cold plunges. And
Kate
that's
and
all.
I opted for the cheapest room that you could get, but still with the nicer food.
Yeah.
That way we can enjoy some dinners with y'all,
sure.
Of course.
No. Right, on the note of travel, can I just mention something?
Yeah.
Our friends over at Going, which used to be Scott's Cheap Flights.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention that we almost booked this on Costco Travel.
Oh, we did
almost
book
like,
it, yeah.
We were like a whisker's width away of going, because there's some awesome deals over there, but in the end, we decided to, there's a good deal over at the website where we booked this.
Yeah.
As well.
It's funny, as a Costco lover, I don't think about Costco Travel as much as I should.
It's one of the benefits of being a Costco member is, and it sounds, I don't know, it sounds kind of old and lame that, oh, Costco Travel, they got these packages, but they're really great.
Yeah.
And we would highly recommend
especially
checking that out.
If that's your jam, the all-inclusive or the cruise, like they do.
Or
they
just night,
do
like some nicer hotels at a nice, like
Hawaii.
A nice little island to get away to. But yeah, in addition to that, though, you were talking about Going.
Yeah, so okay, it's called Going. Used to be called Scott's Cheap Flights. I liked the former name, but they didn't ask me. But they are reducing the value of their free membership. I have been a free member of Scott's Cheap Flights for a long time, and I'm trying to decide whether or not I'm going to pay for it. I think I probably will at some point in time because when I start to travel more frequently. But Scott's Cheap Flights, sadly, they're limiting their free members to domestic deals only, mm-hmm. no international deals. And so I got the last one to, it was like late January, to Spain. I was like, oh, I'm going to miss these little notifications thinking about trips I'm not actually
going to
take.
Thinking about going abroad, even though you're not going to.
I still think, though, I think they're doing like 50% off for the first year for people who do upgrade. It's a great value if you still know that you're going to travel internationally.
Yeah.
But just a word of the wise for those of you who have those free emails set up through Going, well, they're not going to be nearly as good of emails moving forward unless you want to go to Vegas, California, wherever, New York. I mean, that kind of stuff. You're not going to get those sweet Japan deals anymore.
Exactly.
As a freebie.
Or the what was it, the mistake fares is right. What was one of the features of their premium membership as
but
well.
But when you think about it, if you do travel even just once a year and you let the deal dictate where you go, $24
It's nothing. It truly is nothing.
Yeah.
As long as you know you're going to travel at some point that year, it could totally be worth it. In addition to checking out Costco
Promise,
Travel.
Not trying to sell their product for them, but just saying it's a good deal. And Scott knows what he's doing. We love Scott.
Yeah, I guess that's the other disclosure. We like the name Scott's Cheap Flights because we had Scott on the actual show and he was a blast to talk to. So I guess that's our first official story for today's Friday Flight. Our next, let's talk about credit score. I'm hesitant to say hacks, but yeah, well, let's get into it. We've talked about...
It's an overused word.
It is.
Come on, sandwich.
We've discussed... don't do that. Don't. the financial flexibility that renting can provide you. That's even more true these days, given that rent increases have mellowed out and home prices and mortgage rates are still high across most of the country. But there is one disadvantage that renters have versus their homeowning peers, or there's, I guess, multiple disadvantages, but certainly one is the ability for their on-time monthly payments to help them to build a credit score. That being said, technology is here to save the day and to help responsible tenants see that credit score soar. And I think part of the difficulty until now has just been with mom and pop landlords, individuals who have maybe a handful of rentals.
Yeah.
And the ability to basically systematize millions of folks like us out there who we're not tapped into some like larger network per se. And, you know, this is sort of been a difficult problem to solve, both from a landlord's perspective where you're trying to have some degree of accountability of a tenant who's just like, man, I know this guy's not reporting anything to the credit bureau.
What you going to do? Keep my security deposit? Okay.
Which is why it's a great idea to sometimes ask for a larger security deposit if it's a potential tenant who does have a rougher financial history, but also from the perspective of the renter, of the tenant, it's like, oh, dang, this is an amazing way to report installment loans, which is one of the key factors that play into that credit mix that plays into your developing and growing your credit score.
That's right. Okay, so you mentioned that technology is here to provide a solution. And there have been other technological solutions, Matt, in recent years, but those haven't been flawless, right? There have been third-party sites that would allow for this. But that typically meant that the tenant had to ask their landlord to sign up for this service. And it was a lot of landlords were like, I don't know about this. Well, that means until now, less than 5% of tenants have had their rent payments being reported to the credit bureaus, helping their credit score rise, right? Like you're saying. So most of them just haven't had access. Well, Zillow just entered the chat. And Zillow, they could massively increase, I think, that 5% number in short order because of the market share that they have and that they continue to gain. Basically, tenants who already pay their rent via their renter's payment dashboard on Zillow can enable this reporting, and new renters will simply be asked if they want to opt in when they enroll. And Matt, you and I use Zillow to list our properties.
It's the best.
I would totally use them to manage payments too and to accept payments from tenants.
Which I have not done.
I haven't either.
I need to look into that. I don't know.
But especially now, if my tenants like want to get that credit reporting boost, I'm all for it, right?
So, I'd be willing to do that. It's specifically because Zillow is a recognized name. They've got market share and the ability for us to also streamline what it is that we do. We're already using Zillow when it comes to listing the property, so why not when it comes to collecting rent?
Do it all in one place.
Yep.
And sadly, Zillow, though, only reports to Experian for the time being, although they have said they aim to change that in the future and report to all three of the major credit bureaus. So this is not a silver bullet, but it's still good news if you're a renter, and it's worth asking your landlord about payment methods you can use that will help you build your credit, especially if you're a renter who wants to buy a home in the near future. That credit score, super important, and this could really help you, give you a 20-30 point boost over the coming 6 months to a year.
Yes, it only helps your credit score. That's the other part of it too, is that Zillow is only reporting payments that are made that are on time. So if you've got a late payment, guess what? You're totally in the clear, which again, doesn't help the landlord as far as the accountability and making sure that they pay
on time.
But
I thought I saw something about 30 days, that there was a 30-day grace period, and it wasn't considered late until it was beyond that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm sorry. What you're saying is that at some point they do report the negative.
I thought it was 30 days.
Only the positive movements. And the 30 days has to do with what is considered on time. So as long as you make a payment within those 30 days, it is still considered on time, which is lenient as all get out.
So basically no downside.
Yes, in my opinion. So if you are a renter and you're looking to boost your credit score, I would highly recommend checking that out.
Let's keep talking about housing for a second. And we promise not to get political here. We try to avoid that at all costs on the show, but we'll just use a political comment to try to make a point. Elizabeth Warren, Senator, she made some comments this week, and she basically said she wants the head of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, to reduce rates because she believes that it will make housing cheaper. And so, Matt, I just thought it was worth asking the question, is that true? Would reducing rates, which the Federal Reserve said, oh yeah, we might do that in March, and now they're saying, maybe not actually quite that soon, would that earlier reduction actually help grease the gears of the housing market and bring costs down for everybody? Granted, buying a home is essentially off limits to tens of millions of folks right now because of insanely high prices. So I get the concern.
I get what she's trying to achieve.
Yeah.
However.
But yeah, part of the problem, though, that we are in is because of what's happened with interest rates. There's obviously a big reason rates had to go up. Inflation, the main one. Has that problem been solved? I think we're getting closer, but we might not have fully landed the plane yet. So should the Fed listen and cut rates in an attempt to increase housing affordability for buyers who have been sidelined because of sky high rates? I guess, Matt, like what it boils down to is I think it might not have the impact that Elizabeth Warren's hoping for. It
makes me think of the Princess Bride quote where he's like, you keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Yeah.
And so in this way, I do not think lower rates are going to lead to what you think lower rates are going to lead to.
Yeah.
And that's often, I think, because we still have a supply problem within the housing market. And if we see mortgage rates, if they go from just north of 6.5% and they just drops a full point down to 5.5% tomorrow, well, yeah, that'll increase supply a little bit. It'll also increase demand a lot, potentially sparking a feeding frenzy like we saw a couple springs ago, which in turn is going to push housing prices up even higher than they are now. Now, home builders, they seem to be doing their best to increase the supply of new homes. That's good news. But we're still millions of units short after the building industry was decimated during the Great Recession. So we're talking about lower rates, basically firing up demand. Obviously, borrowing costs are a big factor into that. But there's also just the stage of life factors as well. And we still have an entire generation of millennials who are in like prime home buying phase of their life, basically. Yeah. Like millennials want homes, and it's a massive subset as well. Like, there are way more millennials than there are Gen Xers, than there were boomers, not combined, but just as individually. Yeah. And so there's just a need for housing. And not only are all these millennials looking to buy a house, but some who have purchased a home, they're looking to buy a slightly larger home now because guess what? They're having kids. I guess I'm saying all that because I don't expect to see housing. They're not going to continue to like skyrocket.
No.
But man, there's no way that home prices are coming down
in a significant way.
Exactly. And by lowering rates, it's only going to drive rates up. Or home prices up even faster, in my opinion.
And actually, prices are going down in some parts of the country. It's just not on average across the whole United States of America. We don't expect to see prices go down in a meaningful way as rates come down. And actually, in some parts of the country, it might create a firestorm again in the housing market, causing
prices
to rise really quickly.
I don't see how it doesn't.
Yeah. And one of the things, too, Jerome Powell was kind of asked about this week, and he basically said, the housing market isn't really our purview. We're all about curbing inflation and maintaining solid employment numbers. And so that's kind of the Fed's dual mandate and what happens in the housing market. It's not like they're trying to crush the housing market or trying to make it ridiculously expensive to buy a house. It's just not really their job.
The other part of this as well is we're in 2024. It's an election year. And not to be overly cynical, but I think we're going to hear a lot of things coming from our elected officials on both sides of the aisle.
Or wannabe elected officials.
Making massive promises, signaling. Dude, it just feels like so much theater and the ability to get in front of a voting base and saying the right things in order to appeal for those votes.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know, that's all I'm going to say there.
Okay.
And it happens, I think, on both sides.
Yeah,
obviously.
No, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Most of the politicians just annoy me. All right, let's talk about taxes, Matt. Tax filing season has begun. I know you're thrilled. I know our listeners are thrilled to get the paperwork started.
I actually kind of do like
you're probably like the 2% of people who's like, woohoo, yeah, this is fun. Well, there is some news that we need to get to on the tax filing front. A couple things, actually. TurboTax, for one, is no longer able to advertise their products as free, according to a new ruling from the FTC. Why? Well, because those free products that they were supposedly offering weren't actually free for the majority of people. Apparently, two-thirds of folks who thought they were going to be able to file their taxes for free by getting this free TurboTax software didn't qualify for the free product. And, you know, at that point, they were so far down the tax filing rabbit hole that they just paid TurboTax in a very kind of blackmail style affair. TurboTax has to tax us. Oh, yeah, you thought you had the free. Well, in the fine print, in the terms of service, you didn't actually quite qualify because actually you had some income from a gig job that you had. Or, oh, you didn't tell us about that investment property. This is going to cost you money now. And so TurboTax, they are appealing because they disagree with the FTC ruling. But it's probably worth pointing out that there are truly free ways to file your taxes, even if TurboTax isn't going to be one of them for most folks.
I forget what where that story was, but they had a quote in there from TurboTax or from Intuit, the parent company of TurboTax, and they're like throwing serious shade at the FTC. They're like, "Oh yeah, well you suck too." so childish.
We've thrown some shade at the FTC too this year. So, but I will say, TurboTax deserves its fair share of shade too.
There's a valid point that TurboTax or Intuit is making. I certainly get that. But bottom line, though, I'll say that the offering from the IRS that they have concocted, so it's available for the first time this year. It's only available though to folks in 12 states. It's called Direct File, and there's maybe some issues with it. There's been some early reviews. They're not stellar, as it seems to only be able to handle basic returns. And so that's not a great free option. Again, I'm not like an anarchist or anything, but I'm not expecting anything that the government's going to develop to be like this amazing piece of software that everyone's going to, it's a joy to use. It's not like shopping at Publix.
But again, it's free, but it really only covers some of the most basic returns, which leaves a whole lot of people left in the lurch.
There's an income cap as well.
Not to mention the people in 38 other states.
Yes, exactly. And so that being said, you still have the option of Cash App taxes. It still takes top billing, in our opinion. It is 100% free for both federal and state filings, and it offers help to a just much bigger swath of folks who have different levels of tax complexity as well. And so we wanted to mention that because it is worth checking out. And also, if you're one of the folks who has more of a complex tax situation, it might definitely be worth it to hire a pro, because this is one of those instances where you might be cheap rather than frugal by not going with a tax professional if you have a more complicated tax return.
We'll say the average cost to hire a tax pro in this country is like $220.
Well, that sounds so affordable.
It does.
Yes.
And the average tax pro is probably going to be able to save you more than that by knowing kind of some of the...
Easily.
Yeah, some of the tax codes, the ways that you might qualify for a potential deduction that you didn't know about, something like that. Mm-hmm. They're kind of up to snuff on these things, whereas... you and I, Matt, we aren't. We trust the pros on that front. And one other just kind of good option. You mentioned Cash App taxes. I love that one. Well, Free Tax USA, that's another solid one. It's $0 to file federally, $15 no matter what state you're in. And we have a new article actually up on the site that we'll link to about when it makes sense to hire a tax professional instead of going with these cheaper or free filing services. So we'll link to that in the show notes.
That's right. And by the way, I'm sure that very few How to Money listeners actually mail their tax return in, but just remember that going analog, printing it out, maybe even doing it by typewriter if that's your jam, is going to slow the process down significantly. And especially if you are owed a meaningful refund, we would recommend for everyone out there to make sure that they are e-filing. That's
snail mail is a no-go.
I think that's the boat that we might be falling into this year, because last year we ended up owing a ton, and I think I may have overcompensated this past year and made, what is it, the quarterly deposits in excess of what we're actually having to owe. So I really am kind of chomping at the bit to get my return filed.
When you got a refund coming, it makes you a little more excited.
Yeah. So,
and we should at some point, maybe soon, talk about how to handle a refund, the average refund being more than $3,000 for Americans. So we'll talk about that too, maybe in a couple weeks.
Sure.
But all right, let's we got more to get to, Matt, including more bad news for people who work from home. I think we kind of pulled the rug out from under you last week, and sadly, we're going to do it again.
Yeah, no good news.
Nope, we'll get to that and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We are back from the break, and let's now get to the ludicrous headline of the week. You remember back in the day, we're trying to get Elon Musk to sponsor the ludicrous headline because of ludicrous mode on
Well, I hear he doesn't have nearly as much money as he used to, Matt.
He doesn't after Delaware. Well, they're appealing that decision, evidently, his compensation package.
So, anyway. I mean, if I lost $56 billion from my wallet, I wouldn't sponsor us either.
I would be appealing as well. Okay, this week's article is from The Journal, and the headline read, "Your new $3,000 couch might be garbage in 3 years. This is why." And you know, the basic suggestion in this article is that fast fashion, it's actually sort of leapt out of its industry and it's made its way over to furniture. And apparently they just don't make them like they used to. They don't make those armchairs like they used to, Joel, those futons. And one of the culprits is the dozens of online furniture sellers. They're not all created equal. And many of them actually use just shoddy techniques that cause their products to not last very long. They end up either like fraying, they discolor, get all misshapen after you sit on it a few times.
Those adorable little mid-century buttons start popping off and you're like, what happened?
Sounds like you're speaking from personal experience, Joel. Essentially, they just fall apart within months instead of years or honestly, like even decades, like our parents expected our furniture.
Pretty sure my grandma had the same couch like my entire life. So
maybe like once every 20 years, you get it recovered. You take it to like a local reupholstery place.
Yeah.
Is that reupholster?
That's right.
Is that what you'd call somebody who does reupholstery?
I believe
so. Reupholster. So there is a person in the article.
Unless their nickname was Sandwich, and then that's what you call them.
They had a quote, or one of the individuals they profiled, they said that their Big Lots couch, it actually held up better than the one that they ended up buying for Joybird, which I took a little personally because I think we have something from,
oh, do you really?
From Joybird.
Oh.
It's holding up all right, but not all online sellers are out there peddling crap. We want folks to be careful out there. And Consumer Reports, they've got some rankings of the best, not only in-person retailers, but online retailers as well that you can buy from. Room and Board and Costco, they actually took the top two slots. But simultaneously,
not only do they sell cheap hot dogs, but also
amazing travel packages,
solid furniture.
But here's what's so hard about that. And this is one of the issues with online retail, and especially something like someone like Costco, is that like there isn't a Costco furniture warehouse up in Amish country where there are craftsmen making the most beautiful furniture, a lot of times these different retailers are sourcing their goods from different manufacturers. And so, like, you just have to really dig in.
Yeah.
You have to put the work in to figure out if the item that you are looking at buying, if it's getting good reviews. And you also need to know, I think one of the reasons Costco rated so highly is because of their return policy.
Agreed.
Because when you don't know whether something that you're going to order is going to be solid or not, you need to be able to send that thing back or to take that thing back in person. So I think that's just one of the many steps that you can take in order to combat some of the cheaper furniture that's being sold online.
Yeah, I think know the return policy, know the warranty, and know the brand and the reviews of that brand. Wirecutter is another great place to turn. They recommend Article as one of the top spots for ordering furniture online.
And okay.
I've got an Article couch. It's been great.
You still digging it?
Mm-hmm.
I said Joybird. It wasn't Joy. It was Polly and Bark.
That's right. I didn't think you had Joybird.
No. Yeah. Which, but again, it's like, how much better or worse is it? They're all kind of the same, I think.
They a lot of their stuff looks similar. So
it does.
I think that's again why the return policy and the warranty are worth looking at. And also,
this
might sound crazy, look to Facebook Marketplace.
Yes.
Maybe something that's
used, baby.
8 or 10 years old. Reminds me of my grandpa shirts that I owned that I bought at the thrift store 15 years ago. They still holding up. Even better than some of the shirts that you might buy these days. Brand new off the rack.
Mm-hmm.
Also, furniture has clearly gotten more expensive in recent years, despite how much competition has come into the space. And Matt, there was an article in Barron's that reminded me of what you and I have been saying throughout this period of higher than normal inflation. And that's that you and I and all of our listeners, we have more power to combat high prices than we think.
Yes.
We usually think we're sitting ducks. We just have to grin and bear it, take it on the chin. Well, grocery stores, this article in Barron's highlights, are feeling the heat from each other. It's a highly competitive industry. The margins are razor thin when it comes to grocery store chains. It's not like they're making money hand over fist like maybe in certain other industries, including like certain tech companies. And prices are starting to level out because consumers are changing their buying habits. So our ability to hold off on a purchase, to wait for a sale, or to like ask for a discount, all those things have a major impact on the personal rate of inflation that we experience. And so just it's good to see inflation chilling out. It's leveling out at the grocery store too. And you know what? The more we can change what we're spending on, the more actually it's going to have an impact. I know it's a drop in the bucket overall, the overall rate of inflation, but that drop in the bucket matters for you, and it does actually contribute to how retailers are able to price things overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think what you said too, just about changing your behavior and just holding off and just asking yourself, do I really need this thing? We oftentimes get our needs confused with our wants, and it makes me think about how Kate and I, we've kind of, towards the end of last year, we started shopping around a little bit, looking around and to see, okay, at some point next year in 2024, we probably are going to need a second vehicle. But there's just a big difference between something we actually need versus something we think that we need. And what I realized, I saw myself kind of going down the slippery slope, and I've almost already mentally and emotionally purchased this vehicle because
the Bugatti, right? That you had your eyes on.
Actually, it's just a few year old Toyota RAV4 hybrid, baby. I could picture it in my driveway. I'm like, oh man, it would be so much fun to have my own ride. I haven't had my own car in like 15 years, which is crazy. I'm sure to most of our listeners out there who are listening to this, a vehicle is certainly more of a requirement, more of a need as opposed to a want. But in our case, it hasn't been. But again, what I'm getting at is like once you start going down that path of shopping and envisioning what your life would be like with something, even though we don't necessarily need it, like we were still moving in that direction, as opposed to just hitting pause and saying to yourself, like, and granted, this is an extreme example. Like, again, most people do need a vehicle. But do you need a vehicle that's as nice as the one you're looking at? I bet you could go with something that's a little more affordable. That would then allow you to pursue some of your other financial goals. But I think it's just a good thing, in this way at least, to second guess yourself.
Yeah. And hold off a little bit longer.
Yes.
Much smaller example, but we have some folks coming over and we've only got one TV in our house, but we want to put the kids in one room and let them watch something and adults watching something else. And Emily was like, guess we need to buy a new TV. And I was like, actually, pretty sure this is a one-off thing. I could probably borrow one from somebody. So instead of like dropping, I was just going to drop like $176, actually, I know the exact amount, on a smart TV from Walmart. That's the best deal I found. And I was like, that's not a bad price. All right, cool.
Not too bad.
But then I questioned it. And I was like, do I even need to spend that? Like, can I just borrow it for this one day instead of, like, we're rarely, if ever, going to use a second TV in a normal week or year. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm just going to borrow one from my folks and then take it back when we're done.
Nice. Is that the cheap, I don't want to say cheap move. Do you want to have a TV down there at some point anyway?
That's the thing. We're not going to use it really. If I was like, oh, we'll probably use it once or twice a month, then I would buy it. But
yeah.
I'm like, we're not, so yeah. I'll borrow it.
I like it, man.
I'm taking the Katie Wolk Stanley route.
Use it up, borrow it, make do. I forget what's
use it up, make it do, or do without.
Do without.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that's the other thing, too. I really love the wearing it out part of it. Because, like, I don't know, I was just thinking about this. I just switched to a new pen. Because I just had a pen that ran out of ink, like, 10 minutes ago. And I thought, man, I cannot remember the last time I was using a pen that ran out of ink. Because oftentimes we just end up throwing things away just because they look kind of shabby.
Still perfectly good,
as opposed to it being perfectly fine. So we're pushing folks in that direction of using things up and being happy with what it is that you've got. But that being said, sometimes you do want to buy new stuff, especially teenagers. At least I remember being a teenager and wanting new things.
There were a lot of wants. Yeah.
Yeah. So all that being said, if you have been guilty of calling younger generations lazy, you might want to eat those words, because evidently kids are working. Teen employment reached a 14-year high this year, which means that high schoolers are not afraid to get a part-time job. And the increase has to do with the abundance of jobs. It has to do with the higher rates of pay that are available to teens right now. Younger workers have seen more dramatic pay raises than any other segment of the population, with wages rising almost 10% year over year. And so I think that's good news in our book, the ability to get a bunch of young workers out there when otherwise maybe they'd just be sitting around watching TV. I don't know.
Nintendo switching
on their phones.
Yeah.
Like we're obviously not calling for the normalization of child labor, but there's just a lot of good that teens can experience on not only the financial but also the relational front by working just a part-time job, like even just like 5 to 15 hours a week. I love that towards the end of the story they highlighted a teenager, and she only works one shift a week, and she points to the fact that she knows that this is going to be, she's not making bank, but it gives her great experience because someday she wants to own her own business. And so for her being in the service industry, it's huge, the different lessons that she's learning.
Learning on the job, for sure.
I love it.
And yeah, it's not, maybe the paycheck's not massive, but at least the hourly rate's higher and the experience is invaluable. And Matt, let's talk about jobs a little bit longer. We've talked about how fully remote workers are less likely to get a raise or a promotion. But there's more bad news. If you work from home full time, you'll often actually be the first to get axed if your company starts downsizing.
Mm.
And we hate to be the bearers of bad news,
yep,
but new stats from this company, Live Data Technologies, find that 10% of fully remote workers were laid off last year compared to 7% of hybrid and full-time in-office folks. Why the disparity? Well, it might not even be because you're less productive or you're not good at your job, although I think if you're fantastic at your job and you work from home, your employer is probably not going to lay you off. But it is more of a human instinct to slash the job of the person you don't have to see every day, like face to face.
Yeah, it goes to the person that you don't have to look in the eye necessarily because you're looking at the camera instead of the screen.
Yes.
But like literally, I mean, it makes me think, going back to the raise or the promotion thing, like it's obviously not all about the human connection that we form by being in the office together. But you can't discount that either. Like, it has an impact on your compensation and whether or not you even keep the job to begin with. And unemployment, it is still at record lows. But if the economy does tighten, if layoffs do increase, man, at-home employees, they're gonna feel it the most.
Yeah, and just like you and I talked about, you have to just think about the trade-offs. And maybe if you work from home full-time and you do think, you know what, I might be the first person on the chopping block, it's a good idea maybe to have more savings, to pad out your savings, more than someone who works in the office 5 days a week and feels like their job is more solid. So just know, it's just worth pointing out, hey, if the economy does experience some turbulence, people who work from home might experience more turbulence
than
the
rest. Be warned. Yeah. So next week, we're going to be speaking with a career professional. We're talking about jobs here. We're going to talk about jobs that pay really well, careers that you love. So you can look forward to that episode next Wednesday.
For sure. Okay. One place you might want to consider working, though, Matt, if you're in the market for a new job or if you're looking to get paid more, is Walmart. But you didn't think I was going to say that.
I did, because I know the story you're talking about.
There was some articles this week highlighting the fact that some Walmart store managers make $400,000 a year.
Over 400.
Yeah.
With like salary bonuses.
Super
and
impressive.
Not only that, but all, evidently stock options, or not stock options, but like stock, what was
stock
it?
Grants.
Grants, yeah. Essentially. Yeah.
So this article in the New York Times was highlighting something actually that I was reading about in Sam Walton's autobiography, Made in America. Man, I'm reading that right now, almost done with it. Really interesting book. But that he, for so many years, incentivized his employees to invest in Walmart stock. And
before you keep going, it's really called Made in America.
It's really called Made in America.
Isn't that so ironic?
The Sony CEO wrote one called Made in Japan, and I think he riffed on that. So
well, like that's accurate, yeah. At least because I mean, come on.
Well, so Sam Walton's
are most of the things that they sell at Walmart made in America?
Oh, that's a good point.
Come on.
No, but he was made in America.
I get that, but simultaneously, like when you see that, it's like made in China. Isn't that like that's the default thing that I think of when I hear.
It probably wasn't when it came out like 25 years ago or something.
Maybe not. I don't know.
But some of his associates, he documents in his book, who worked at Walmart for decades, they ended up becoming millionaires, not necessarily because of the wages they earned, but because they put their money that they were earning into buying shares of Walmart stock.
I love that.
And it was kind of cool to see, oh, hey, I was there for 20 or 25 years, and guess what? I'm retiring with over $1 million. Not that we would encourage people to invest in company stock, the stock of the company they work for, but still, just really interesting. And some of those policies were reduced in scale or done away with over the years, but they're making a comeback at Walmart. And so wages in general are going up, like we just talked about with teens at the lower end of the pay scale. But yeah, Walmart announced stock grants for store managers this week. They're making a comeback. And Sam's philosophy, Matt, it really grew over the years, and he kind of realized the need to treat your employees well so that they'll treat their customers well. I think when he first started off, he didn't really understand that, and it negatively impacted his business. But as he understood that and started to treat his employees better, that helped to improve the company. And this incentive, I think, is Walmart putting their money where their mouth is.
Totally. Yeah. And so you mentioned single stock investing, basically, or investing with maybe the company that also employs. So it's worth kind of tackling the other side of the coin, I guess, about whether or not an employee should want to own significant amounts of stock of their employer. And, you know, to not have too many of their eggs in one basket, the answer is no. But we're kind of focusing on the positive here. Like, this is a first order question, right? Like, what would you do otherwise with the money if you weren't going to invest it at all? If the answer is just consume it, well, then shoot. Investing is going to be when the majority of Americans are under saving and investing for their retirement. The answer here is a slam dunk. Yes, go ahead and invest those dollars. Yeah. But if you're looking to truly optimize what you do, because a lot of times those stocks are offered via an ESPP, is that Employee Stock Purchase Plan? And a lot of times those stocks are offered at a discount, So here's what you do.
Oftentimes like a 10 or 15% discount.
Yes. So what you do, you take advantage of those stocks being on sale. You hang on to them for as long as you need to, like 3 months, 6 months, that kind of thing. Then you go ahead and sell it and go ahead and invest instead in a total stock market index fund or the S&P 500 index.
He's
that way
advantage.
You're fully diversified.
Yep.
Taking advantage of that sale.
Exactly.
That's basically what you're getting here.
Exactly. But yeah. I think like what this makes me think of, though, is that Walmart wants its employees and managers to feel like owners. And I'm not, by the way, trying to make Walmart out to be some sort of exemplary organization. It's an interesting book, and I think Walmart's an interesting company, but it also, I think rightly so, gets its fair share of enemy fire. Like, Walmart's not a perfect company, and they've had issues over the years, especially in recent years. But I like that they're trying to incentivize their employees to have a stake in the success of the company. And it really goes a long way for the employees and their finances, but also for their mindset and their relationship with their employer. Mm-hmm. And this is just, I think, something that anybody who employs other people can learn from. How do you help your employees have a stake in the success of the company, a way that they benefit when you benefit? That's just a helpful way to keep people engaged and to keep talent around long term.
That's right, man. I love it. Sweet. All right. We hope everyone has a great weekend. That's going to be it for this Friday flight. We'll see you back here on Monday. We're going to answer some more listener questions like we do. If you haven't left us a review, by the way, head over to Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen.
We'd question for
love
you.
To see more of those.
Do you think Taylor's going to be able to get back from Japan in time for the Super Bowl a week from this Sunday?
Wait, what? Why is she in Japan?
I think she's got a tour or something. I don't know. I don't really care about that stuff. So
you obviously do, Joel.
I don't know why I even asked it. I'm sorry.
Is it we were talking about Made in Japan earlier? And yeah.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about the weekend, it just, football, that kind of stuff.
Sorry. Yeah. No football this weekend. Wait for the following weekend. But all right, that's going to do it. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.